This is episode 113. Welcome to the Principal Entrepreneur. My name is Jonathan Royce. I'm a husband, father, principal, entrepreneur, writer, and author. Every week we offer you content that supports educational leaders with strategies and suggestions that answer the question, how do I become a great principal? I also interview principals and school and educational leaders just like me and you and discuss their areas of expertise and how they overcome the challenges within schools. Today's episode, we're chatting with Miss Katrina Riley. Miss Riley has 20 years of experience in education. She's been a teacher, coach, and principal. She's seen education and how education systems work from a number of different states, including Florida, Louisiana, and Maryland. She earned her bachelor's in English from Florida State University, her master's in ed leadership from Nova Southeastern University, and completed the New Leaders for New Schools Principal Residency Program in New Orleans. Not only has she brought her skills and passion to various states, she also has worked in public, charter, and nonprofit educational settings at both the school and district level. In other words, she has been and seen education from every angle and brings these insights to her newest passion, the principal nerd. And that's what we're here to talk about today. But before we talk about the principal nerd, the inspiration for it, and how she supports principals, we're going to take a quick peek at her educational journey. Miss Riley, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
I am so excited to have you on the show and learn more about the principal nerd. I just really like the name. It kind of tickles my funny bone there. But like I said, just want to touch a little bit on your educational journey and the sequence of events that inspired you to become an educator. What was that like?
So I always tell people that I fought being an educator. I always loved teaching and teaching people new things, but I kind of had in my mind when I was a young person that, you know, educators don't make any money. Of course, you don't want to be a teacher. So I was hearing all of that. So I kind of changed midway through, I guess, around high school, early college, and said, oh, I want to be a lawyer, because I just thought that sounded more prestigious.
Right.
But I was still volunteering with kids, still working with all of these educational type programs, and I just couldn't fight it. So, you know, after college, I said, well, I'll teach for a little while. You know, I'll teach for a few years before I go to law school. And I mean, I just really started to be really true to myself and realized that I love teaching. I was a natural. I enjoy working with kids. But I knew really early on that there was something else that I wanted to do and really impact other people. So I knew really about my second year in the classroom that I felt like I could be a really strong leader. So I decided to go to grad school. And then from there, I had some really awesome leaders, and it just really took off from there. So I decided that I could really impact one classroom would say, if I was in middle school, about 100 kids throughout the day. But as a school leader, you know, I'm impacting an entire school. So upwards of, you know, a couple of hundred kids to 1,000 kids, depending on the size of the building,
right,
that my impact could just kind of spread throughout there. And then it became the idea that I wanted to kind of duplicate what I had experienced as a school teacher to other teachers and just kind of put that at scale so that we could have really great teachers in front of really great kids, and then in turn have really great schools.
Right. So you said something about being a natural, and what characteristics do you think fall under that range of being a natural when it comes to being an educator?
Okay, good question. I really think, you know, you see teachers who build really great relationships with kids early on, and that was me. It didn't feel forced. I kind of was able to pick up a lot of management things with the kids, being able to connect with the kids, be very relatable to them, and just started realizing, this was before the age of, you know, strong accountability, but we were able to kind of have a lot of control of our curriculum at the time, and just being really a strong forward thinker about, wow, my kids need this particular amount of help. What can I do to make it better? and it was kind of before it became the trend or the thing to do with data-driven instruction. It was just the thing that you did. So, and that's what I thought all teachers did. So those things kind of came naturally to me as a beginning teacher.
Mm. So you had kind of a natural skill set with the relationship building and the communication, it sounds like, piece. You said you wanted to go into leadership because you would have more impact on more students at one time. What was there a specific trigger? Was there a specific conversation with a mentor, or was it just a natural progression for you from the classroom to leadership?
My first couple of years as a teacher, I had one particular principal who, you know, was very hands-off in a sense. You know, we would kind of see him in the hallway. You would see him during your one evaluation for the year, and that would be it. And I just remember thinking, this feels like something else could be done. Like, is this how it's supposed to be? And when I was in grad school, we were learning about different leadership styles. And I remember thinking, I want a leader like I'm reading about. I want someone that I can say, this is, you know, if I'm reading about what great leaders do and great leaders do things differently, where is that leader? Where are those leaders? And I left my current school district at that time and moved to, I had the opportunity, one of my professors was also the HR staffing person for Duval County Public Schools in Jacksonville, Florida. And I told her, I said, I want to work for this person, like whoever we're reading about right now with these characteristics, point me in the right direction. She gave me two names. And I reached out to those two principals. And on paper, they looked pretty much identical in terms of the school size, the type of school demographics. I went to visit both schools and interview with both schools. But I was actually able to find what I was looking for in one particular principal in Florida. And she became my mentor. She took me under her wing. And I was like, this is what it's supposed to be like. I knew there was something different. Schools could feel different. Leaders could be different. And that's when the light bulb really went off for me to see it in action.
Right. And so it sounds like you had a great mentor. You did what you needed to do to get into a principalship. And then in your years as a principal, what was one of your most challenging experiences?
This was my second time as a principal, but the most challenging was when I had to let go of a teacher. And it was challenging in the sense that, you know, you're at the battle of your heart and your mind and all of those things. And right. I had to remind myself that I was doing what was in the best interest of children. And unfortunately, that one particular teacher was not in the best interest of kids. She was struggling. And I felt like I had put a lot of time and effort into trying to develop her, but it was still at the sake of the students' expense, and their learning was being crippled by having that individual in the classroom. So having to take the human aspect, you know, you can't eliminate it. We're all human. So just having to have that tough conversation, the coaching had not improved, but it really was not, it was a kind of a lose-lose situation.
Right.
So, but having to put the kids first, that meant I had to make a really tough decision. And so it impacted that particular teacher, but it had to be done. But I think overall, being able to put another individual that was going to be a better fit for the kids, to reach the kids quickly, was what had to happen. But it was difficult at the time. Just the timing was poor. It was near holidays. You know, trying to keep all those things in the back of your mind and still being a decent human being about an unfortunate event.
Right. So did you make that final decision on your own, or did you seek somebody out and ask, you know, is this the right time to do it, or should I wait till the end of the year? How did you or what was the actual process in terms of thinking and then, you know, coming to that final decision that you took?
You know, at first as a principal, you're like, I'm going to do it and it's going to be my decision and this is going to be it. You know, this person's got to go. I've done enough. This is it. It's final straw. Then you pull back and you say, okay, HR is going to have to be involved in this. Oh, the union is going to have to be involved in this. Let's make sure that I've done everything to cover myself on that end. But on the other side, then the coach in me comes out and says, okay, have I done everything that I possibly can? And so then I'm reviewing my notes. And then from there, it's like the softy side of the principal comes out.
Right.
And when that happens, it's time to call in some reinforcement. So I call my mentor, I call my supervisor, and I'm like, okay, let's talk about this conversation. Let's talk about the situation. Is this something, you know, let me talk it out with you. And then, you know, I'm having my mentor and supervisor who've both been in similar situations and just helping me to get back to what the main thing is, which is the kids.
Right.
And so having someone that can help you get to the balcony is what I call it. When you're in the middle of the dance floor, you know, you're missing steps, you're stepping on toes, you're tripping over yourself, and because you can't see the entire dance floor and the movements. But having someone who can get you to the balcony to help you see kind of the dance steps on the dance floor is really helpful to kind of bring you back as a principal to make those hard decisions that's necessary. Because right. I could have vacillated for months and then I would have still been with, you know, this poor teacher, the poor kids getting poor instruction, and we just would have been in a battle the
right,
entire time.
Right. So. Just that, you know, that cycle of is this the right time? Is this the right choice? Did I do everything I said I would do? Am I, you know, doing what's best based on my own core values? It sounds like you dealt with all that stuff, and it sounds like you had a good support system around you with your mentor and your supervisor, and it sounds like they really helped you to overcome that challenge. I guess my follow-up question is, besides, you know, that piece of focusing on the kids, what are one or two lessons that you learned from that you carried on moving forward?
So the first thing is making sure that you hire quality to begin with. You know, a lot of times I've been in a really urban environment most of my career. And in those environments, we don't get a lot of candidates that are just knocking down the door. And then you get close to a time where it's time for your deadline to have to be fully staffed. And what can happen is you're put up against the wall, like, okay, do I take the chance and have a long-term sub in the classroom,
right,
or do I hire this candidate that you know, maybe I can polish and get them to a good space? So knowing early on if a person is trainable during the hiring process and really trying to get out there as early as you can and hiring your best quality staff on the front end is what definitely I learned that. During that process. So that will eliminate you having to have these tough conversations and making these tough moves and this much transition for kids, you know, later on in the school year.
Right.
And the other thing was just making sure that you're constantly gut checking and quality checking yourself to make sure that you're making the right decisions so that you're not you don't want to move too fast, and you also don't want to move too slow. So you don't want to drag your feet on situations that need to be dealt with immediately. And you also don't want to move too hasty in situations, and then you end up in, you know, possibly a union situation or, you know, breaking some sort of contractual rules.
Right. Those contractual rules are always there waiting to trip you up, especially if you don't file that contract. You do all that work that you thought you needed to do to remove a poor fit, and then you get stuck with you forgot to cross a T or dot an I.
Yep, you missed the deadline, and then they're stuck there with you, and that makes for a very uncomfortable remainder of the school year.
Right. So you
for everybody.
You mentioned trainable qualities. Is there anything that you look for when you're hiring somebody that indicates their trainability? Just, is there a key characteristic that seems to pop up when you're selecting somebody?
So I had a lot of candidates that would sit before me that never had any teaching experience. And in those situations, I'm listening for opportunities where they've had in the past, where they've taken opportunities to learn and grow and develop. So it may not have necessarily been, you know, in a teacher's college setting or any of those type of educational arenas, but has there been other experiences in their lives that they can talk about where they had to learn and grow and to develop in something that they didn't know about in the past? Also, I'm looking to see how well a person can explain or describe their level of flexibility, because as a teacher, and especially in an urban environment, you've got to be very flexible. You know, you may think that, okay, in an elementary setting, you may be teaching third grade, but something just happened and I might need you in a fifth grade position. Like, how flexible can you be, you know, as being a part of the team to do whatever it takes to move the school and the kids forward? So I'm looking for those qualities. And just people who have an eagerness and willing to learn has always been successful for me. I can work with that. I can work with you having limited reading skills, but if you're open to the training and the professional development and the growth that's gonna come along with the challenges, then we're great. We can hire you right on, right. And do great things.
So it sounds like the three things that you're talking about are, one, they demonstrate that they're willing to learn, two, that they're adaptable and they have a flexible mindset, and then that third component, the eagerness or excitement to learn and be in education, are all keys for you. Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads to my next question, which is the creation of the Principal Nerd. It sounds like you've taken your experiences, including this hiring process and how you identify, and you've created the Principal Nerd. And tell me more about that, and what brought about the idea for the creation of the Principal Nerd.
Okay. I mentioned before, I've always loved coaching, and I think everything that I've done in terms of being an administrator has always come from a coaching heart. So when I'm having teachers who are struggling or administrators that work under me that are struggling, my first thought is to go to what can we fix, what's the challenge, versus it being a will issue that you just don't want to do. So thinking of it as a skill versus a will issue, and what can we do to train you up? Especially, I guess it comes from when I was, you know, I was a non-College of Ed entry into education myself. So someone had to train me about some of the things to do. I didn't have a traditional internship or shadowing hours or those types of things when I became an educator. And when I got into administration, I realized that there were so many principals and aspiring principals who just didn't have mentors. And it was uncommon. Well, what I experienced as having a great mentor was very uncommon. And having some of the coaching experiences that I'd had moving into administration was very uncommon. So I would have people reaching out all the time, like, hey, how do you open your first day as a school? Or how are you becoming proficient in reading data? Or what are you doing with your discipline? And so you have all these questions that administrators have, but we work in silos and we're fearful of asking questions. Right. We don't want to be vulnerable. We are supposed to be the leaders. We're the experts now. So, of course, we don't have any questions, or so people think. So we have people in positions that are struggling, and districts are a lot of districts don't have the capacity to train or support their school leaders. So there's not anybody at the district level to coach their principals or their assistant principals. It's almost as if you've arrived, you become a principal, you don't need any coaching anymore. Right. You don't need any hand-holding, you don't need anything. So just go run your building. But we're seeing a large, large number of turnover in school principals. And I'm trying to figure out, where is that coming from? Is it because principals aren't getting the support that they need? Is the workload too demanding? Is it too political? Like, what is the problem? And I figured that with having so many people in my experience that have reached out for assistance in one way or the other, Principal Nerd just kind of evolved. It came out of a space of something that in other areas I didn't necessarily have all the time as a principal, and seeing some of my colleagues struggle with, you know, the information. And at first I wasn't even sure if it was something that people were interested in, but I mean, it kind of grew overnight in the last couple of months, just, you know, just putting it out there during this hiring season. Is so many people who have a million questions on what to do, you got a master's degree, passed your practice exam or what have you, but there's still so many questions, and so many people who are working in silos in leadership. And so hence the Principal Nerd is kind of created to serve in that void.
Right. And what I, one of the things I like about it is it pinpoints specific needs. So you don't necessarily have to buy, you know, a 260-page book for the one specific piece of information that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And you really, mm-hmm. you've really done a good job targeting, you know, specifics, like the first 90 days. What are you going to do? What you're going to do there? What are some of the takeaways that those who join the Principal Nerd will obtain?
So just like you said, we recognize that principals are super busy, and we don't need another textbook just sitting on our shelves that we never read. And I realized that I would always take a section of something, or if I recommended a book to somebody, a teacher, I would say, go straight to chapter 5, read these first 5 pages, and let's talk about it, because they're overwhelmed already. So to give them a 300-page book is just crazy. So I've really worked at trying to figure out what are some of the problems and challenges that administrators are facing, like right now. So right now is hiring season. So people are wondering, how do I master the assistant principal interview? How do I become a principal? What do I do if I have a second round interview? So all of those things are centered around like the hiring season. The resume writing, because so many people are out there talking about what your resume should look like, but they have experience in healthcare or business and not necessarily in education. So a person that is a part of the Principal Nerd tribe, you know, you're getting specific information targeted to each stage of the principalship in terms of the school year. So unlike some of the other materials that are out there, we're really thinking about that school year time. So what happens in the opening of school? What does that feel like? What's the energy like? And then that natural dip that happens around that October, November time. So then there's materials to support you during that time. And then let's get to the holiday season and now you're in testing. So what does that look like during that phase? So it's a more realistic approach about what really happens in a school day to day, instead of this more global outside or, disconnected piece of information that we kind of get as leaders.
Right. You mentioned something that I thought was really unique. It was the second round interview. Most people just think about, okay, I get this first interview and I've nailed it. And then you're like, oh crap, there's a second round. And then sometimes there's a third round, and then I got to meet, you know, not only, you know, the staff, but this fourth round or whatever is the parents, the cabinet, and it's everybody. So just that whole sequence, if you're new to the game, you don't realize that it's not just the one, yeah, I got the job. It's 1, 2, 3, and each time it narrows it down. So I really liked how that reality of it's not just once. You gotta be ready and more ready each time you advance.
So I thought
that was awesome.
And that's really important for other for people who are interviewing outside of their regular home district, because you may be accustomed to one particular style. There's one interview, but I'm coaching a young lady right now who has they have a writing sample as a part of their hiring process, which, I mean, I was blown away that that's even still happening in 2018. But she's like, yeah, we have to do an actual writing sample. So she's now her second principal interview, and she's still doing the same writing, you know, sample. I'm like, how different are the questions going to be? But, you know, that's another thing to think about, even when people are interviewing and applying outside of their home district, you know, that it could be different in various places. So right. to offer any support for that.
And one of the things that I didn't know was that it was okay to, that they were going to ask some of the same questions, and it was all right to have the same answers. A couple of my first interviews, I got the similar question, and I didn't want to answer it the same because some of the same people were around the table, and I felt like I needed to switch it up. I didn't get that particular job, but I did. Somebody was kind enough to come in after me and say, you know, it's all right to have the same answer as you did in the first round. I was like, oh, I would have felt a lot more comfortable, right? Right. You get all stressed out and you start sweating. Oh, what am I going to say?
Yes.
Right. So how can educational leaders sign up for the Principal Nerd?
So they can find me in various places. The first place obviously would be my website, which is www.principalnerd.com. If they're looking specifically for any sessions or bonuses or things that I have going on at the time, like present, it's on the same website, www.principalnerd.com/hey. And so that gives you kind of everything that's going on like right now. So there's the 90-day kickstart. There is the 7-day become the principal challenge. There's also something that's brand new that I just created for assistant principals, which is an ebook, a beginner assistant principal ebook. I'm hired now. What? So really quick and easy, just to kind of help that brand new assistant principal who's got tons of ideas. Right. They want to know what to do, and you know, you don't want them to kind of go in there and shoot themselves in the foot day one. So trying to help them kind of pace themselves. But also they can find me on Instagram as Principal Nerd, as well as on Facebook as Principal Nerd. And if they're interested in joining the tribe, there's information on the Facebook page, which allows them to submit information and get access to just the Principal Nerd tribe, which is dedicated solely to assistant principals and principals.
So three ways: the website, Facebook, and Instagram, and they can find out about the Principal Nerd tribe on each of those?
Each site. Awesome. Each of those, yes.
Is there anything on your mind that I haven't asked you that you'd like to share?
I'll share that I am finishing up a book, so it's
awesome.
It's changed the title. The title was going to be When She Leads, but since Principal Nerd is really taken off, the title is going to be, and you guys are the first people to know about this, which is going to be Principal Nerd When She Leads. And it is a book for female school administrators. So sorry, guys, this one isn't really for them right now, but it is for females who are in school leadership positions, kind of an how-to guide and a book that I wish that I would have had
when
I became a principal. So.
And, fellas,
and that should be out in August.
And fellas, if I've learned anything, if you want insight about the female mindset and what they're going through, and you need a way to gain empathy with your female colleagues, this book sounds like it would be awesome just to grab and the different things that you have to go through that we don't. It's just like teaching an English class, you get different perspectives because it broadens your mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we got one more question here as we wrap up. What two books have had an impact on your professional philosophy?
A professional philosophy. Last Name Whitaker, What Great Principals Do Differently. I believe in there is when I learned about hiring high quality staff as being one of the most important things that principals do for kids. And the other one, which isn't necessarily about my philosophy, but it has really helped me to get a handle on and being comfortable with data, which is Paul Bainbridge Santoyo's Driven by Data. Awesome book. Everything else I had read up until then was like making my head spin, right? And giving me math anxiety and everything else, but his book was awesome.
Right. As a someone with a bachelor's in English, I can completely empathize with.
Yes, nothing me
to
too.
Do with, about nothing to do with data. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today. We've got a lot of great insight. I think the principal nerd is a great way for, you know, first, second year principals and, you know, experienced principals just to take a look at and see what has fallen through the cracks because of the habits that I've created and the routines that I've been in. You know, there's always stuff that we find easier. So there's stuff that gets missed, and it sounds like what you have there is a good checklist in terms of finding materials. I think that's it. Let's say goodbye.
All right. Thank you so much.
Again, that was Miss Katrina Riley. If you found this entertaining, educational, or cause for reflection, please follow me and click share if you're able so your friends and colleagues can benefit as well. For more short articles and tips that support educational leaders, check out my blog at howtobeagreatprincipal.com and or order my newest book, How to Be a Great Principal, 36 Shared Leadership Success Strategies. You can also get a monthly email that delivers the most valuable blogs as voted by readers by joining the Principal's Prep Minute. If you're an auditory learner, you can download other podcasts at The Principal Entrepreneur on iTunes and Podomatic. Episodes are replayed weekly. If you're interested in sharing your experience, like Ms. Katrina Riley did as an ed leader, please email me at jonathanroyce@theprincipalentrepreneur.com. Finally, I'm part of a community of supportive principals. Please join our private Facebook group. Thanks so much for joining me today. This has been Jonathan Royce of The Principal Entrepreneur.